Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez, and this is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. And this is being recorded a couple days before Christmas. If you're watching this on cable access, you're actually seeing this on the day before New Year's. So we're going to cover a whole lot of holiday-ishness here today because of the disparity in when we record and when we go on TV and what goes on the podcast and so forth. But that's okay. It's all good. And Cindy, I told you before the show, we've got a couple of emails from listeners asking some interesting questions. And I'm not even sure we're going to get to the second one. So I'm not going to even say what that is so I can save it for another time just in case.
All right.
But the first one caught my attention because it has a direct Christmas connection to it. And that is an email from Daniel, and I'll read it to you. He says, "Hey, everybody, happy holidays. Hey, guys, love the show. It's really helpful, fun, and happy. I don't know if you have ever discussed this before, but I thought it would be fun to talk about Santa Claus and the law of attraction. If there was enough belief from the world, would we manifest a physical Santa at the North Pole? I know that children manifest the gifts under the tree, and in a way, that to me is a manifestation of their belief in Santa. And I know that Rita and Linda connect to Archangel Michael and other saints. I wonder if they or anyone can connect to Santa the same way. I also wonder about when we feel the Christmas spirit, are we connecting to Santa energy? So thank you for your time. And whoever you want to ask, it's fine with me. Keep up the good work." So I'm asking you, Cindy, what do you think? I mean, this is kind of on the spot kind of stuff, you know? But what do you think?
Well, what do I think about that? I have a lot of thoughts about that, actually. There is an idea that a word that is sort of an ancient word, maybe, and a word we don't use too much, and it's a word that sometimes we see in conversations around magic or occult things, but the word is egregore. Hmm. And an egregore is a thought form that is created by a group of thoughts. So a group of people, let's say, and that thought form actually begins to take on a life of its own. And it is fed by belief and by thoughts and by stories and by, and that might sound really weird, but when we explain it further, it's like really obvious that we've all experienced it. And Santa Claus is one of the absolute best examples of it. And like the spirit of Christmas, right? Like we all know what that means. Like I've had people say to me, "I'm not feeling like I'm in the Christmas spirit because of COVID." Or I've had people say, "Hey, even though we're in quarantine, we're baking cookies over here and we're decorating. And we're really feeling, you know, we've got the Christmas music on and we're really in the Christmas spirit." It's like, all I have to say is that, and you know what that means, right? So Santa Claus is sort of like a manifestation of the Christmas spirit, or a manifestation of the egregore, if you will, of Christmas. Of like, everybody can list, anybody you asked could write you a list of qualities, right? He's jolly and he wears a red suit and he brings presents. I mean, you know, we have the stories about him. So I love the question though. It's like, if we all were of the same mind, would we actually physically manifest a Santa Claus at the North Pole? I totally think it's possible. Just because of what I talked about before. Like, we see this in marketing all the time. Like, if you know anybody that's a huge, like, Disney fan, that, like, they know all the movies, they know all the songs, they have a Mickey Mouse sticker on their car, like, everything is about Disney and the Magic Kingdom. Like, I know some people that's their thing, and they went on their honeymoon there, and they, you know, everything. So it gets all wrapped up in the spirit of a thing, which that spirit is that thought form that we've created. So why couldn't it happen, right? And not even in a weird, you know, mystical kind of way, but just, hey, there probably is someone who resembles Santa Claus that lives at the North Pole. I mean, I can believe that there would be. What do you think, Paul?
As you were talking there, I had a couple of thoughts come to me that had not occurred to me when I was reading his question for the first time. One of them was you were describing, and he said this in his question, but you described it too. What if everybody believed that there was Santa Claus? And it brought to mind a comment that David Strickle of The Stream had made to me one day. I can't remember if he did it voicing The Stream or if in his own voice. It could have been either one. But he expressed the idea that if the world was full of people who all thought the same way, the world would end because there'd be no more contrast. Everybody would be thinking the same. So it would have basically ceased to provide its purpose, which is to be a place of contrast for us to come to live in. So does that mean that Santa Claus existed? Well, it sounds like nothing exists at that point in terms of a physical world. It all kind of disappears. The other thought that went through my mind was that it's probably true that some people would manifest a Santa Claus at the North Pole and others would not. It's kind of hard for us sometimes to keep two seemingly disparate thoughts in our minds at the same time, but really there's nothing to prevent both from being true. I mean,
right.
You like to bring up every so often, I think you brought it up last week, the idea that our minds, our brains handle so much information. You always ask me too, how much information is it? Because you can never remember. I wanted to let you know, I looked it up. Okay.
Yes.
So we can settle this one. It turns out it's 11.21 million bits of information that our senses receive every second.
I had a much smaller number in my mind and I thought my number was really big. So, okay. Yeah.
That's according to Encyclopedia Britannica, by the way.
Okay. So 11 point something million per second.
Right. And our brains can handle 50 per second. So essentially, our brains take in, but are not able to process 99.99955% of the information. That's how much we take in that we cannot process.
So basically, we filter almost everything out.
Almost everything, yes.
Right. So it makes total sense that some of us are filtering certain Santa at the North Pole's out and other of us are not, right? we could say that about anything.
I don't know how I would prove or disprove that actually. Because what are you filtering? What am I filtering? I don't know.
We watched a movie last night called Parallel. And it's reminding me of this conversation. It was a movie about a group of friends that found a mirror that they could walk through and there was a parallel universe on the other side where, you know, almost everything was exactly the same except for a few. And it's just, you know, that's always an interesting thing to explore. But when you say it that way, that we are filtering out almost every bit of information that comes to us, almost all of it. It's like, makes sense that we don't even need to go through some mirror to be in a parallel universe. And so we're all in a parallel universe already.
Continuously. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the mind blowing part about it. And if we are all in parallel, well, what's one of the ways we describe it? We say that we have our own bubbles of reality.
Right.
Isn't that a way we often describe it?
Right.
Well, it's a good way to describe it because if every single one of us is capable of filtering entirely differently from everyone else, of course it's going to be like we have all different forms of reality, all different experiences of reality, different bubbles,
right.
Because we can't see the same things. It's like the old story. I don't even know if this story is true, but it's the story of how when natives in America first saw ships from the Europeans, except
that
they
didn't
couldn't see them.
Yeah.
They couldn't see them, right.
Right. Because they filtered them out because they didn't fit into any type of reality that they would accept.
Exactly.
They'd never seen them before.
And it's completely plausible. I don't know if that actually happened. I think it almost doesn't even matter because the example is such a beautiful one. It just illustrates so perfectly. If you don't have a way to grokket, to use the Heinlein term, then how do you know it's there?
this could go in a direction to be a super deep discussion, just because of how important, I mean, I've been having conversations for the past 2 days that are very similar. And that always kind of blows my mind when that happens, where I'll talk to different people and they bring things up and there's just this kind of a continuity in the topic. And one of the things that's been discussed a lot is about being confident in your experience. Like, and that, especially when someone is trying to tell you that something didn't happen that you know did happen. I mean, I had more than one client bring this up over the course of a couple of days, where something happened in their life and someone else was trying to convince them that that's not the way it was, that that never happened. And I said, it's really important that you trust yourself and that you are confident in your experience, because if you're not, you will start to, you know, feel like you're not grounded. You'll start to be uncertain of your own thoughts. And, you know, that's kind of the serious side of this discussion. But the truth is, everyone is perceiving something that's either slightly different than you are or vastly different than you are, right?
And to my perspective, the big news here is the absolutely amazing fact that so many of us experience in many ways the same thing.
I know. That's exactly the thought that I was having yesterday, right? When we saw the movie. I thought, well, isn't it sort of a miracle that we can ever agree on anything?
Exactly.
Right. If, like, that there was that article we talked about, where the scientists were saying that everything we perceive is probably not like what's actually there at all. Right. Which, if we go real extreme with that, we think of fantasy movies like The Matrix, right, where their reality and their perception of reality were just miles apart, completely different. And I was thinking, well, if that's true, then it's sort of a miracle that we ever both perceive the same thing, that we can all look at an item and agree, you know, on its size and shape and color. Like, that's sort of a miracle.
because
that means that we're all selecting the 15 things per second that we're willing to accept, and we're all throwing out the same 11.2 million things.
At least in some way, in one particular way.
Right. It's hard to comprehend, I think.
And even there, we aren't 100% sure. Because if I say to you the color red, you have a particular image or thought in your mind about red. What red
I
is?
Totally,
so
could
I.
Be thinking of what you call yellow. You know,
that's the frustrating part. I mean, right. How do we really know?
How do we know?
Or let's say we're able to identify that you and I both see what we call red, and we both identify it as having the same wavelength, because science likes to say, well, red has this wavelength, right, and yellow has that wavelength, and so forth. Okay. Well, let's presume that that's true. Do we still perceive red to be red? And what is red? What is that? What does, if you have to describe what red is, I mean, I don't know how to describe what red is. Red is red.
Red is the color of Santa's suit.
That's right.
So, I mean, when you ask that question about manifesting Santa, look at all the small children who believe in Santa.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't they manifested Santa in some form?
Sure. Yeah. Well, look how many large children believe in Santa. Seriously.
So they've manifested Santa in some form.
Yeah. I mentioned on the show a day or two ago about how my wife, Louise, loves every year. She hasn't done it in the last 2 years, although I think she's going to do it again this year. She loves to put up a couple of commercial type stockings, you know, not like a regular pair of socks, but one of these Christmas stocking kind of things.
Right.
She'll put them up and they'll be empty on Christmas Eve. And then she'll wake up in the middle of the night and she'll fill them with all kinds of stuff. And then the next morning on Christmas Day, we'll get up and she will behave like she has never seen it before in her life.
I love it.
Now, perfect. Is she manifesting Santa Claus? For yes. That moment in time, she is.
Yes, right. Exactly. So the answer is yes. Yeah.
And by the way, she reinforces it because she never says, I wonder what I got for Christmas, or I wonder who got this in here. I wonder what Santa gave me. That's the way she always phrases it.
What will Santa bring? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if she pulls something out of a stocking, look what Santa gave me. It's like a razor or something. She'll go through the drug cabinet and pull out stuff and put it into the
I was thinking about it this morning because of having a conversation with someone whose child is probably getting close to the age of questioning, and things have been so strange with COVID, everything different. And I thought to myself, and I don't know if this is anyone else's experience, but I don't remember, you know, learning a different view of Santa as a child. I don't remember. So apparently either it traumatized me so much that my memory decided to get rid of it, or it just really wasn't a big deal.
Now you have me wondering. I'm trying to remember what my experience was. I do remember feeling a bit, what word would describe it? Cynical, when I kind of figured out the whole thing.
Right.
Because, I mean, I remember what it was like when I still somewhat, I don't think I ever totally believed in Santa, which is an interesting thing to say. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's my recollection. That even when I, quote, believed, unquote, in Santa, I really wasn't sure if it was true, but I just didn't care. It was great.
Right.
So why would I question it? You know, there'd be no point in questioning it.
I always questioned everything, and I pretty much still do, which makes me think that, yeah, I could stay in that same place where I'm not real certain about it as like a 5-year-old. I don't remember. I don't have that memory.
I do know that one of my favorite memories of Christmas comes from just around the time I'm not sure if I had actually decided that Santa didn't exist as a human being coming down the chimney. I can't remember if that was the case or not, but it was right around that time. And it was the best Christmas that I ever remember having in terms of being surprised. Because this would have been, let's see, 1961, 62, something like that. And my dad decided he wanted to give us all a thrill, but particularly give me as the oldest child a thrill. He ended up buying a used electric train set, which is about the most he could afford. It was an American Flyer, for those who know the old American trains. And he set it up around the Christmas tree. And I remember, now we lived in an old Cape Cod at that time. And we were upstairs, of course, in our bedrooms. And we could hear him fussing around downstairs. It's Christmas morning. And we start creeping down the stairs. And my mom says, no, you can't go around the corner yet. So we're sitting there literally on the stairs, about 2 feet from where you turn the corner to see the living room, right? And you can hear him doing stuff. You know, you hear sounds, but you aren't really sure what they are. And then all of a sudden you hear the sound, shh, what is that? Uh-huh. And we're looking at each other, my brother, my sister and I, we're you know, trying to peek. My mom won't let us peek. Finally, they let us in and we went over to where the Christmas tree was and saw this train going in like a figure eight around, part of it going around the tree. It was a very large figure eight. And literally, I mean, we were all excited by it, but we were so stunned. I think we were about 5 or 10 minutes before we even considered the idea, oh, we should open other gifts. It was magical. You know, this is, you know, pre-computer, pre-video game.
Yes, it's such a great story.
Yeah, I mean, this is like ancient technology, but for that time, it was exciting. You never saw anything like that. It was,
yeah, that's awesome.
The idea of going to a department store and looking at their window decorated for Christmas and seeing a train going around it, that didn't even happen. I mean, this is like before all of that stuff. And to see it around your own Christmas tree was just, it was just mind blowing.
Now, here's the question. Where's the train today?
My brother was the last one who had it. I don't know if he still has it. But he was the one who, he became the holder of the trains. Later on, he also got some HO scale trains. So we had a couple different size electric trains. But
that's
yeah,
cool. Yeah.
That was really something. Yeah. I'll never forget that. So
I love it.
Did I
How
believe in Santa
you?
Claus? I was about 5 at that time. And I don't know what I would have answered if you had asked me, do I believe in Santa Claus? But on that particular day, odds were good. I would have said yes.
Right? Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, so, I think that's my answer is I think it's not only possible, but I think we already do it.
I think we do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look how many Christmas stories are in some way touching on the question and then answer the question in a way that suggests that Santa Claus lives because he lives in all of our minds and in our dreams and in our memories.
Right. You know, yeah.
Well, there's the famous letter that was written by a young girl in circa 1900, something like that.
Right.
To a newspaper where she asked the editor, my dad tells me you always tell the truth. So tell me, is there a Santa Claus? And he writes the famous letter that gets published saying, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
Yes.
Now, what's really cool about that particular story is that the editor was a grizzled newsman. This guy, I mean, he was the type who reported all the worst news and the most corrupt politics and, you know, the most horrid events. I mean, this is the kind of guy he was. He wrote those kinds of articles all the time. And the last thing he wanted to do was to write this letter, to write this article answering this little girl about whether there was such a thing as Santa Claus. But he did. And he wrote this wonderful article to basically says, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus and he lives in the hearts and minds of everyone that we know.
So doesn't that sort of prove the point again? Because
it really
was
does.
Out of character for him, but yeah. It's that spirit, right?
In fact, I think it was captured in a movie starring Richard Thomas, I believe. I'm pretty sure he played the editor, the young fellow who played in The Waltons many years ago. But yeah, really good story. So I don't know if that answers your question, Daniel. I think it answers it to our satisfaction.
Well, you know, what I love about this conversation is that we're talking about thought forms. So things that, you know, it's the whole concept of thoughts becoming things.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And yeah, Santa is real.
Which is the movie that I know that is it the movie called The Santa Claus, where part of the movie explains why it is that Santa is able to do things like go down the chimney where there are houses with no chimneys and things like that.
I don't know.
It's that movie. Yeah. I don't remember which movie it is, but I think it might be that one. And, you know, so for instance, if he goes to an apartment building in the city and, you know, there's no chimney, there's no fireplace. When he needs to go deliver presents, a fireplace with a chimney will appear so he can go down the chimney.
Oh, got it.
And then when he's all done, it goes back to being whatever it normally is, you know, 364 days out of the year.
Right.
You know, so you there's all kinds of ways you can find to explain this kind of thing. And I think it's all good.
Magic.
There's also a similarity I want to bring in here. And this may sound a little bit downish, but we do live in a world of contrast. And I think it's a useful comparison to make. We live in a time where there are a lot of conspiracy theories. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to point out there's not a whole lot of difference between believing in Santa Claus and believing in a conspiracy theory. But I think there is one key difference that makes one joyful and the other one, ooh. And that difference is, what is the intention of the person who's sharing the story? If the person who's sharing the story is intending to do something because they want to feel lighthearted about it, because they want to share joy with others, because they want to express joy, happiness, clarity, and so forth, then great. I mean, who can possibly object to that? On the other hand, if the purpose of sharing the story is to basically fool somebody, to trick them into something, to deceive them, to pull the wool over their eyes for the purpose of getting the better of them and so forth. So I think most of us don't really feel good about that kind of thing. And I think that's what the real difference is. It's what's your intention? Is your intention to spread love and joy? Or is your intention to basically steal somebody else's energy?
Well, there's an interesting quote by the philosopher Goethe that says, at the moment that you commit to something, that the universe conspires to assist you.
Yes.
Right? So it's that kind of conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a conspiracy of blessing. It's a conspiracy of happiness and joy. That's different. That's a different energy.
It is. It's completely different. And I think that's what the energy of Santa Claus is. That's what the energy of all these happy child myths, as I might, you know, structure them or describe them. And they're good. I like them. I think they're great. In fact, isn't that what we try to learn as conscious creators? We try to learn how to create this imaginary world in our minds and then manifest it into reality, despite all of the evidence to the contrary.
Well, what's interesting is if it is true that there are 11 million pieces of information coming my way every second, mm-hmm. some of them have to be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I would think.
So I feel like what we're doing when we start to become aware of our thought processes and try to be a little bit more conscious of how we think is that we're focused on filtering out what we don't want and grabbing some of those bits of information coming towards us that are in alignment with something better. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
sure.
that's what we're doing is we're just taking into account that the things we want are actually already there. The things that are better than what we're experiencing are actually already there. We just keep filtering them out because they're not in our story. They're not in our frame. So we're being conscious about where we, you know, point our magic wand, so to speak, where we, where we focus our thoughts.
Josie in our live stream is bringing a tangential question, if you will, that ties in nicely to the Santa question. One that you and I are uniquely qualified to address because we have addressed this topic before. She says, what are your thoughts on Neville Goddard's take on Christmas?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Because I'm not sure what that question is referring to. Neville Goddard's take on Christmas. You're going to have to give me more information.
I don't know that he ever actually described Christmas, but I think we can kind of infer what his take would be because we know what his take on Christ is. So I think it's one step
exactly.
away.
That's what I was going to say is that he does talk about, he talks about what would be referred to as the Immaculate Conception. Mm-hmm. He talks about the incarnation. But it's always referring to our subconscious and making the subconscious conscious and using our imagination to do that. And that Christ is our imagination. That's the power of creation. That's his take on it. I mean, in that way, but I don't know if there was some other story that I've never heard of.
I don't believe there is. I think this is Josie being creative Josie that she is.
Well, yeah, I mean, it lines up because there again, we have our ability to create.
Which is cool. And it ties in directly, just the way you were saying.
Exactly.
It ties into exactly what we were talking about. In fact, it reminds me that Santa Claus, as we know him today, is actually a derivative of a religious figure, Saint Nicholas, who was, among other things, the saint of miracles. And that's an interesting little piece there, because when you realize that's where it all derives from, well, yeah, of course Santa Claus is miraculous. You know, his origins are miraculous. His origins are all about miracles. So how, what else could Santa Claus be, really, when you think about it? Of course he has to be about miracles. And if that means that some people will experience Santa Claus being at the North Pole and others won't, well, that's a miracle too.
Right. You get to choose.
Yeah. It's up to you.
Yeah.
Now, she also has a follow-up question I want to include too. She says, do you believe that we should treat every day like Christmas?
I think it's important, and it's part of our makeup as humans that we find and mark time as being sacred or special. It's why we celebrate birthdays. It's why we choose a date for a wedding. It's why we have, you know, Christmas among many other holidays that we observe. I'm not sure what you mean by treating every day like Christmas, but I don't think every day is the same. And so it's kind of like contrast, right? It might not be contrast in a painful or terrible way, but some days feel more special because they don't happen every day. And so I think that we mark time as humans. We mark time for a way to say, this is special. And then we celebrate that. So I'm not sure, you know, I think if we try to make, regardless of what it is, if we try to make it the same all the time, if we try to make every day the same or every, you know, meal the same or every podcast the same, it loses its ability to keep us curious and excited about things that are different. So I wouldn't want to keep it the same. But someone else might want to try to have Christmas every day, and that's fine too, right?
Well, I think you're right. It depends on what you mean by treating each day like Christmas. I mean, if what we mean by that is to treat each day with joy and high vibrational feeling and so forth, then well, yeah, sure. If that's what you mean, I agree with that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Great.
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, the whole idea of believing in something. It's like I said before, I don't have too many beliefs. I like to entertain possibilities. I like the idea of some days being special or sacred because it's how we mark time in our journey. Mm-hmm. So it works for me, but I'm all of, you know, sure. If you just mean having a high vibe, then every day we should attempt.
Also, while we've been talking here, I've been kind of mulling in the back of my mind what we had previously talked about with Neville when we were going through all of his books. And, you know, I think there was at least one occasion, I don't remember which book it was, where Neville broke down the Christ birth story and use that as a way of equating Christ to consciousness and, like you said, Immaculate Conception and all that.
Right.
That he drew parallels for all of those to explain how the consciousness play, he often called it a play, how the play plays out. So that may be what Josie was referring to as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that he did as well. And that's why I was like, well, was there one specific story that he told or something? Because basically, every time he goes through that kind of explanation, it's always the same. He always comes back around to
right.
Christ being, you know, our imagination.
Yep. Interestingly enough, too, he equates imagination with consciousness because mm-hmm. Christ also equals consciousness,
right.
But Christ also equals imagination. So it's A equals B, right? Consciousness, therefore, also means imagination. And that's a cool concept. In fact, I want to ask you something about that. We can talk about this from a Neville perspective or not, but it was occurring to me during a previous podcast in the last 3 or 4 days, something like that, where I was focusing on the concept of source energy and realizing that in order for source energy as a concept to work, there also has to be consciousness with it. It doesn't actually make any sense to talk about source energy without consciousness. So I guess I wanted to ask you, do you think that consciousness and source energy are two ways of saying the same thing?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I like that.
And I don't
like
know that. The answer to that one. It's like one of those brain teasers.
I think of consciousness as being as awareness of being.
Mm-hmm.
I am conscious. I am aware of my state of being. And for instance, if I make a decision, I want it to be a conscious one, right? It's like, I think of consciousness that way. So source energy, I don't think I would say I think it's the same thing. Probably because there's a sense of energy that's not part of me that is giving me life, like the sun, right? Like water is life. The sun, we couldn't live without water. We can't live without the sun. We can't live. All of those things have an energetic signature. And I still don't think that's probably what you mean when you say source energy. But I still think that there's a feeling of it being not quite the same thing as my consciousness. But we also have a collective consciousness.
Mm.
Right? And so is it like, are we our own source energy? It's a good question. I don't know. I feel like source energy is bigger than that, but I don't know. I'm stumped.
I think of consciousness and source energy as being, like I said, inextricably entwined. And for me, I kind of lean the direction you're talking about. I think they are somewhat different. But I think there's also a great deal of overlap. And the reason I say that is, for me, source energy is the way consciousness expresses itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when consciousness does something, you know, focuses on something, when consciousness creates, the way that the creation happens is through source energy. Source energy is our way of describing how that consciousness manifests stuff. And
right.
You need to have some sort of way of describing that. Otherwise, it becomes difficult to even talk about any of this stuff. So that's what source energy is for me. Source energy is it's the thing I can point to that says, yes, there is the wake of consciousness going on right now. Consciousness just passed and left a wake behind, and source energy is the wake, so to speak.
So asking if source energy exists without consciousness is sort of like if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one around to hear it, does it make a sound?
There's some similarity, yeah.
And the answer is pretty much no. Like, that's where we're coming to with, you know, discovery of that, is that no. Why? Because until something is observed, does it really happen? Is it really existing? And so until we observe source energy manifesting in some way, is it really? So how do we observe? We have to be conscious to observe. If we're unconscious, we're not observing anything. So,
true.
So does source energy exist if we're not conscious? Without consciousness, does it exist? It's almost the same question. Yes?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a different way of looking at the same question, but it is the same question. In other words, is there a distinct way? Another way to frame it would be, is there a distinct way to separate consciousness and source energy such that one exists independently and untouched by the other? And I think the answer to that is no.
No.
There's no way to do that.
Yeah. I agree. Wow. We started at Santa Claus and we went really deep, didn't we?
Well, Santa Claus is pretty miraculous. I mean, we're exploring the far reaches of
right.
miracle, but
exactly.
You know. So Daniel asked a good question. This led to some pretty good discussion. And
yeah.
I liked Josie's take on bringing Neville Goddard into it. One thing that did occur to me as we were talking about the Neville approach is that while Neville, I don't know if he actually talked about it as Christmas. I think he talked about the Christ story, but I don't think he really talked about Christmas as a holiday per se, if I remember correctly. But if he had talked about Christmas as a holiday, obviously his take on the Christ story is dramatically different from let us say, the Roman Catholic Church's take or the typical Protestant Church's take on the Christ story. I wonder how his take on Christmas would have varied from the more religious view of Christmas. And I'm not even sure where to begin to answer that question, but I thought, hey, let's bring that one in too. You know, we're asking all these impossible questions. Anyway, go with that one.
Right. Well, I actually just had to find out what I could find out. So I did a little search, and there is a lecture. There's a Neville Goddard lecture that is recorded as December of 1968. Christmas. Okay, you ready? Subtitle: Christmas, Man's Birth as God.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
So,
and that's toward the end of his life too. I mean, that was near the end of his time as a teacher and as
that's true. Right.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like I like Neville Goddard's way of thought, and I like all of his stuff, of course, but I really probably favor some of the stuff he did in his later years, because it seemed like there was a process of him getting there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's very subtle, and unless you like read everything that Neville wrote, like Walt and I did, over a period of, like, you know, condensed into just a couple of years, I don't know if we would have really noticed it, but we started noticing some kind of subtleties that were like, oh, that's a little different. And then we realized
yes.
It was because it was different. You know, whatever he said in 1968 was different than what he was saying 10 years earlier. So just slightly, but it was subtle, but it was there. So yeah, so he did address it. Man's birth as God.
And that makes sense.
Well,
from what I remember.
But it's a twist, right? Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's totally Neville. But we always hear in religious, you know, sermons and things about Christmas, we hear God being born as a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Neville stood that on its head and
right.
said, this is man being born as God.
Yes.
And so I think that that's very, very much a Neville Goddard kind of frame.
I like it too, to be perfectly honest.
I like it
honest.
Too. I like it
yeah.
too.
I like it better than the original, actually.
Yeah.
I do. I like it a lot. Oh, also, Andrew, in our live stream, going back to our earlier conversation on the question of if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? He gave his opinion. He said, I think the tree makes a sound, but we don't hear it.
Prove it.
Prove it. It
yeah.
does raise an interesting question. Is there such a thing as a sound if there are no ears to detect it?
That's the paradox, right? That's the
yeah.
question, is that unless something is observed, does it really happen?
It makes a vibration.
Yes.
I think that's fair to say.
Fair.
Yeah.
I think if it's a big enough tree, the earthquake meter thing, that what is it called?
Oh.
In a while
yeah,
since
yeah,
I lived in
called?
California. Yeah. would measure it, right? It would
oh,
measure
sure.
the vibration. But does it make a sound if there are no eardrums to vibrate it? You know, if there's nothing to record it or to witness it or observe it, is it happening? That's the question.
I think it's the Richter scale, isn't it? Isn't it the Richter scale
yes.
that measures the earthquakes?
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, the Richter scale actually can measure very, very fine vibrations that humans can't feel.
Yes.
So
correct.
That means the Richter scale could actually detect that vibration no matter how fine it is.
Right.
Cool. Good for the Richter scale, even if I can't tell.
I live fairly close to Tiger Stadium. Go Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And Tiger Stadium made a roar so loud on several occasions that it has recorded on the Richter scale.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a sound.
Yes.
That happened.
there are a few ballparks that have that effect, especially the older ballparks. Yeah. Not just baseball, too. Football as well. And yeah, There's quite a bit of history with that kind of thing. A few that come to mind: Fenway Park, Yankee Stadium, the original Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. Yeah, they were pretty loud.
Pretty loud. Humans can be pretty loud when they're in a group.
No kidding. So let's take this a little step further here. I think we've identified the idea that Santa Claus can not only exist, but also not exist at the same moment because of different people perceiving it, different people imagining, different people having different ideas. And so for one person, there can be a Santa Claus living at the North Pole, and for another person, there isn't. And both are perfectly valid. Both can happen at the same time. And it actually kind of reinforces the idea of the multiverse, the idea that there are, you know, multiple universes all happening at the same time and in the same space, so to speak. Well, yeah, I guess they are happening in the same space if you got two different people on the same planet having two entirely different experiences. So, yeah, I think that's definitely possible. We also explored the Neville connection, and you found a great article about that, so that's cool. I guess the thing that we also shared a couple of Christmas stories too, which is kind of fun. I guess the only thing that's left for me to discuss is if we posit the idea that any of us can create Santa Claus because we are all creators and we can enjoy Santa Claus, then does it really matter whether or not everybody else believes in it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
And
because it isn't a contest.
Well, the idea also of if something is real.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, there are stories about him. There are people that dress up like him. There are people that believe in him. And he is celebrated. Everyone knows his personality and the things that he does. So to me, and this is the whole idea behind an egregore, is that we have made him real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have thought this form into being. And
I like that concept. I had never heard the word egregore before. So I was glad that you introduced us to that. But it's a cool concept, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's very, very LOA-ish. And it kind of gives, well, anytime that we introduce a new word to describe what we talk about here on the show and what other people talk about when they're talking about law of attraction, anytime that you have a new word that clarifies things, it helps. It just makes it so much better.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of why I like it so much. But another reason I like it so much is because not only does it make it more clear, it also gives me a way of exploring it further. And I like that. You know, anything that makes it easier for me to take the concept one step further and gain more clarity about it, gain more understanding about it, I like that. So I'm going to remember that word, even if I don't know. How do you spell it? I'm not even sure how you spell that.
Egregore, I believe. Egregore.
Okay.
I wrote an essay about egregores a year or so ago. I will dig it up for you.
Well, it's definitely going to get its own hashtag today. I don't know if anyone ever searches for it, but too bad. So very cool. So I think we've done pretty much what we can do with that. I don't really want to get into the next topic just because we only have about 10 minutes to do it. And the next topic is one that really could take quite some time. I mean, just reading the email is going to take some time.
Yeah, I definitely would like to save things like that to for an entire segment, at least so that we can give it the attention it deserves.
Yeah, I think it really deserves better attention, so I will save that one. So let's just take the last few minutes of the show and just let's just talk about things like, you know, very basic things like what are we doing for the holidays and, you know, what do we hope for in terms of what's going to happen in 2021? I do know this, I've repeated this a few times, that there are a number of people who are promising to stay up on New Year's Eve this year for the first time in years just to make sure that 2020 actually leaves. And you know, I can understand the sentiment behind that one. But it's also probably a nice idea to figure, well, how do we want 2021 to go?
Yeah, my husband
was see different.
My husband was telling me he saw a comic of, you know, how they always portray like the year that's leaving as an, like an old man, and then the new year as a little baby. And he said the old man, the 2020 old man, was just completely trashed and beat up and just looked like a wreck, and was saying to the baby, you want to just come on in a little early?
Yes, right.
Oh, I just, you know, I think we all have hopes for the new year every year. But this year, like no other, just wanting, you know, I think this year has given us such a huge dose of, awareness about what we want to see changed in the world. And I think many of us, if not all of us, are hoping to see some changes that, make the world a better place. You know, wherever we live on the globe, that we just want things to be better. And I think that's totally possible. I love that we just had this great conjunction, Saturn and Jupiter. I don't know if you went out to see it, but we actually could see it with the naked eye from our house, from just, we went across the street and there it was. The two planets almost, even though in reality, you know, millions of miles apart, but to the naked eye, inhabiting almost the same space. So it looked like a very bright star.
Right.
And the sign that that's happening in is Aquarius. And we haven't had a conjunction this close for like 800 years, I think. Mm. So the conjunction, the great conjunction, Saturn and Jupiter being in the same space, you know, Jupiter is all about expansiveness. Jupiter is very much like Santa Claus, pictured out very much like Santa Claus. Okay. Jupiter is always shown as a jolly man that just brings gifts and presents, and Jupiter's energy is very expansive. Saturn is all about limitations. Hmm. Saturn is about being responsible and getting the work done. And, you know, so they're kind of opposite each other. They do bring some kind of balance, but they've been in, I believe, in Earth signs for the last like 200 years. And just with this conjunction, they have now moved into Aquarius, which is an air sign. So in the past 200 years, I believe there's only a 20-year space where they were actually in an air sign. They kind of went into an air sign and then went back. And that was from 1980 to the year 2000. That's when the whole dot-com thing happened and then blew up, right? That 20 years. And so the air element is very much the dot-com thing, right? I mean, these waves move through the air. Digital stuff through the air.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. Okay.
So we're moving into, you've all your life heard that song, you know, the Age of Aquarius?
Right.
Well, that just happened and now we're there. And so think of that song and the words to that song, right? Peace and love abounding, harmony, you know, it's like, that's where we're going.
It's interesting you should mention that. Seriously, it's interesting you should mention that, because when 2020 first came in, I announced and I played throughout the year the idea that this was the year of clarity, playing on the idea of 2020 vision, right? And I maintained that it has actually proven out to be exactly that. Now, I didn't promise that clarity was going to be comfortable, and it certainly has not been comfortable. Mm-mm. But I think it's fair to say we have achieved clarity as a population far beyond the small population of people who are into conscious creation. Into the greater population as a whole, we have achieved levels of clarity in the greater population that far exceed anything that has happened in the last 100 years. I mean, huge amounts of clarity.
Yes.
And I think in the long run, that's actually really, really good. It may not be comfortable when we're going through it. I think most people would say it has not been terribly comfortable.
No.
But it has been tremendously growth inspiring.
It reminds me of the, you know, the truth will set you free.
Yes, right.
Clarity, yeah. Like really seeing the truth of something. Mm-hmm. Gloria Steinem said that she's famous for saying a quote, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. So,
That's pretty much it. Yes.
Right. It's like, has it been comfortable? No, there's been a lot of emotions that we are not generally comfortable with. Right. Anger, frustration, rage, you know, just a lot of emotions people don't like feeling, don't know how to handle. But what's the upside of that? The upside is the clarity part that you're talking about, and that we've seen some things be revealed that we didn't maybe pay attention to before, hasn't been comfortable. But when that happens, you know, it's like, think about it like a house. I've remodeled my office that I'm sitting in. You know, my house is almost 100 years old, and I've remodeled it a couple of times. And when I first bought it, I bought it from the original owner. So I'm the only other person that's lived here besides the original owner. Well, when you start to tear things apart so you can renovate them, sometimes it's a shock.
Yes, that's true.
Why did they wire it this way? But, you know, after you get past that shock and you have to admit the reality of the thing, it needs to be fixed. Then you fix it, and it feels so much better because you know it's done right. I think that's what's happening on a huge scale all over the world. And I think that that's what gives us hope for 2021.
Well, when you mentioned, I didn't realize that we were now entering the age of Aquarius. I thought that we had already entered it, which shows how little I understand about astrology. But the fact that you said that we're entering that, okay, well, that's cool. And it also dovetails nicely with the concept of 2020 being a year of clarity, and with something that Linda and Rita and so many others have been talking about for a few years now, that we here on planet Earth are going through this tremendous vibrational shift upward, an increase in vibration. When you do that and a whole large chunk of the population has no knowledge of vibration, or perhaps doesn't believe in it or whatever, that means there's going to be a large chunk of the population that, guess what, is going to stay in low vibration because that's what they're used to. And now they're feeling this great big disparity going on. There's this high vibration part, there's a low vibration part, and the two don't really play nicely together. Well, that's pretty much what we're describing right now. But what everybody that I've heard who talks about this shift going on has pointed to is that it leads to a much, much better scenario for everybody involved, including those who are living at the more lower vibrational levels, because in the end, it essentially raises everybody up.
Yes.
And isn't that just another way of saying 2020 is a year of clarity? It's basically two ways of saying identically the same thing.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's all, you know, it's good luck, bad luck. Who knows?
That's right. Yes. Good luck, bad luck. Who knows? Well, I think we know the answer is yes. It's good luck and it's bad. It's both. It's everything. It's whatever we say it is.
It is. Yeah, I'm hopeful. And that feels good, right?
It does feel good. Yeah. Now, just a reminder, of course, we had an extensive show here talking about Daniel's question, which was a wonderful question. Thanks for sending that in, Daniel.
But we also want
to encourage other people to send questions in. That is one of the reasons why I created the LOA Today app, because not only can you listen to episodes on it, but there are a number of goodies plugged into it, including, for instance, the ebook that Cindy donated, The Lovely Magician's Guide to Soulmate Success. But in addition to that, there's a form. There's an Ask a Question form, and that's where you can send your question in and have it addressed here on the podcast. So take advantage and do exactly that, because we'd love to include your questions. Even if you're just sending in a note to say, hi, I listened to the show, that's cool too. We love hearing from listeners. And I know we say that over and over again, but guess what? It's true.
We love hearing from listeners. Yeah. And, you know, even if you have a question that's personal to you, something that's going on that you want some help with, we'd love that. Any questions you have, we'd love to answer them or, you know, have a conversation with you about them. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So take advantage. And since this is also going to be broadcast on cable access on the 31st, this is also an opportunity to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, Cindy. I know I'll be talking to you next week, but this is a good time to get that in there.
Happy Christmas, and, Happy New Year, everything. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
And same thing to all of our listeners as well. And thank you to the live streamers for their contributions today. They made some good contributions.
Indeed.
We appreciate that so much. And with that in mind, we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.